Welcome to WRTI's Classical Stream, made possible by contributions from listeners like you. Learn more at WRTI.org.
We have a wonderful guest today. His name is Chuck Dallenbach. He is, I guess, the head honcho of the Canadian Brass. Is that right, Chuck?
Oh, I'll accept that. That sounds great.
Does that mean
co-head?
You get all the problems and you...
Exactly.
You have just, yeah, that's what that... I figured that was what it was all about. And you are an amazing tuba player, and you have been with the group. Is that from the very beginning?
Correct.
Tell us a little bit about when the Canadian Brass got together and who the original members were.
Well, we were all in Toronto 1970 doing one thing or another. Gene, our trombonist, had been in the Toronto Symphony, and I'd come to Toronto to teach at the university, my first job in life. And, of course, we met up almost immediately. It's a very small world when you get brass players. It's
right.
Number them on your two hands, usually.
Yeah.
And we found each other very quickly and realized we had common goal of putting a brass quintet together with no real idea where it could lead, but we knew we wanted to play our instruments. We loved the instruments and loved the sound and the music we could play, and wanted to see if we could develop something where we could share that with audiences and basically see if the challenge was to see if we could make a living doing it. And that was how we started out in 1970.
That is rather unusual, though, to kind of depend on that, because one always, especially when one is studying, one thinks about going into an orchestra, of course, with a brass instrument, that's mandatory, I guess.
Sure.
And so to go out there on a limb with an ensemble, that's quite heroic.
Well, there was a problem then that really has not abated at all, and that is that really the only... sure opportunity is it's like basketball, the NBA, is an orchestra job.
Mm-hmm.
So the other 97 or 8% of the graduates from music schools mm-hmm. are pretty much left on their own to figure out how to continue being performers. So we just took it headlong. It was not a surprise to us. Sometimes it's probably a surprise to string players, realizing that the orchestras are even full of string players now.
Yes,
but
of course.
For brass players, we were well aware that we were on our own and that we just needed to put our heads together and play the hand that's dealt you and figure out how we could approach it and see what we could come up with.
Well, you certainly are an amazing ensemble. I mean, your ensemble playing is just incredible, and I'm sure through the years you've perfected the sound so that you know what you're doing. But in the beginning, what kind of repertoire did you play?
Well, we were, inheritors of a very small repertoire. But there were a few gems in there. The American Brass Quintet, the New York Brass Quintet, and the Chicago Brass Quintet all trace their roots back to about 1940-something, 88 or 9. And particularly the New York Brass Quintet had done a great deal of commissioning. Malcolm Arnold, who's now Sir Malcolm Arnold,
yes.
Wrote a brass quintet. Eugene Botza loved to write for everything, and in amongst everything was a brass quintet, mm-hmm. as did Hindemith. Hindemith wrote a quartet and a large brass ensemble. We used his quartet quite a bit, just doubling some of the parts. But beyond that, it was a handful of transcriptions. So we just started out. And I think what made us maybe unusual in the music world is, unlike other kids at the time, we were sort of kids, young players, first of all, school concerts were looked at as something you sort of had to do.
Mm-hmm.
And we took a different approach. We looked at them as laboratory opportunities where we could, as a group, stay together, work together, and play music together, and then figure out how to present that music in a way that would be appealing to our audience, which were children. We found that they were very quick to respond. They were a wonderful laboratory for us because, unlike adults who might politely applaud at the end of a concert and then just never come back, children will let you know right away. You can see boredom in their eyes within seconds, and you can hear the results of boredom you know, surely within a couple minutes.
Well, that explains the answer to my next question, because the Canadian brass in my day, when you heard Canadian brass, you heard clowning around very seriously.
Right. Well, I think that particularly people who had not heard us play, the buzz was that we did something unusual, and sometimes, and we took a leaf out of the rock and roll world, which is, if you're getting mentioned at all, you're lucky. so we didn't take it too hard, but we were often criticized for as you say, clowning around. But we
but
always
playing
took music.
So fantastically.
Well, that's it.
Yeah.
We rehearsed as any good string quartet would rehearse. We put the time and energy, and we had a lot of coaching. Music to us is the reason that we're doing this at all. So music was always on a pedestal for us, and we treated it with the proper reverential acclaim. But it was the presentation that we felt needed the adjustment and the work, because we were meeting audiences that had never seen brass instruments up close in real life.
Really?
So to us, you put a mouthpiece on your lips that seems normally, we do it, you know, several hours a day, and then people would look at that and say, well, that's an odd way to make a living, you know. So we knew we had, as Lucy used to say, got a lot of splaining to do.
Yeah.
You know?
But the thing is, you made it such fun, and then one would stop and be awestruck. Really, I say I mean that, by the technique and the sound of your ensemble. So wonderful. So many, many, many years. How many were you, actually? It was a five, was it?
It was always five. It was always the quintet. That was pretty much the format we inherited. And a brass quintet depends, and I have to be really honest here, being the tuba player, it really depends on a pair of really wonderful trumpet players. You really need those solo. And unlike a string quartet, where you can have the leader, the concertmaster, in a sense, and a second violin, brass is too tiring to have one person be the lead, the leader
for
a two-hour concert. So it's a co-equal chair, and you always need two really fine trumpet players.
Now, a sad subject. Was Fred Mills with you from the very beginning?
Within 2 years. It took us 2 years to get to what we consider the long-run group.
Mm-hmm.
Fred was in the... quite an interesting history to Fred. We beat on him for quite a while to join us because he carried with him quite a reputation. He went to the Juilliard School for a graduate school.
Yes.
And in New York, he met Stokowski, played for Stokowski, and he also got to the Casals Festival and the Marlboro Festival. So he had quite a nice classical history behind him. And he was the principal trumpet in the National Arts Center Orchestra in Canada, which was, unlike in the States, the government formed an orchestra up here in 1969, and he was the principal trumpet. So he had quite a secure job. He could have, you know, lived out his days there quite easily, and we lured him out of the comfort zone of knowing what his schedule would be 10 years hence, with the idea that what we were doing was fascinating and gave him an opportunity to stretch out as an artist, not just be on call, but to actually be a functioning member of creating the repertoire particularly that we were playing.
So now Fred Mills just passed away.
Yes.
That, of course, leaves a hole. I guess it's an emotional one as well for all of the players, because I'm sure you developed very close friendships through the years.
Well, we grew up together, and he was the picture taker. He was the one that documented our travels through the 70s and into the 80s. And there's very much a kind of a brother, a family attitude. Gene and Fred, before we'd actually started the group, we knew Fred quite well. In the late 60s, they'd even bought a house together. I think Gene and his family were on the second and third floors, and Fred was on the first floor.
Uh-huh.
So, it went beyond music. But it's on the one hand, it's a tragic loss, but on the other hand, it's really brought out a response that's quite remarkable. He's really left a mark, particularly with young players. For the past 12 years, he's been teaching at the University of Georgia.
Mm-hmm.
And he has a whole flock of students now, or ex-students, that are doing quite well in the music world.
Well, actually, your group is how old now? You said you started when?
Well, we're getting close to 40. I think September 1 next year will be 40 years.
40 years. Oh, my goodness. Now, I have to talk about this wonderful album that you have released, a tribute mm-hmm. to Louis Armstrong, who was, again, a wonderful guy in many mm-hmm. ways, just not only as a musician, but as a person.
Right.
This is so delightful and so magnificently played. Was Fred on this album? I guess so, right?
Fred was not. He was not playing. Fred has not been actually an active member of the group for some time, but we play a lot of his music, and he was still writing for us. And we also had what we call the Trumpet Dream Team. So,
can hear it. You can hear it on the It's absolutely right. Spectacular. Tell us the members, the names of the members of the group now.
Brandon Ridenour is our new young wunderkind. He's a really recent graduate of the Juilliard. In fact, we made a point of establishing, in the discussion here about Fred and also our other first trumpet player, Ronnie Rahm, they were both graduates of the Juilliard, and maybe the school itself is not necessarily so important in this context, but the fact that they were schooled in the same place, had the same approach to music, the pair of trumpets seemed to be really, really important. So we've reestablished that now, and we have Brandon and another young fellow, Christopher Coletti. And the two of them, again, are friends, as were Ron and Fred prior to joining the group. They've been friends and colleagues and also have a similar approach to playing. So with a trumpet team like that, we feel like we're kind of witnessing. Gene and I, it's kind of our goal now, because obviously we're the two that have been there for 40 years, and we're thinking a lot about how we actually propel the group towards the future and do so at some point without us. And we think that we might very well have reestablished here a trumpet team now that can be that in that leadership role.
Well, let's hope you'll be around to record some more music for a while. But talk a little bit about these. Some of these are Luther Henderson arrangements, aren't they?
Yes. Luther was our connection to the past. It was the long-standing relationship we had with Luther. We met him on our first, well, there's so many facets to this, but we were the first brass ensemble to have a major label recording deal.
Really?
And it was with the RCA Red Seal.
Mm-hmm.
And RCA was also very strong in Broadway. They just recorded the Ain't Misbehavin' show.
Oh, that was, I saw that on Broadway, by the way.
Oh, you did? Well,
oh,
if you remember, the fellow playing Fats Waller with his back to the audience at the upright piano that actually delivers the last line of the show was Luther Henderson.
Really? Okay.
He not only wrote the music, but they had him. He actually played and was on stage for that last the last bit.
And was it Nell? Nell Carter was a phenomenal cast.
Very much so, and a very strong relationship. See, Luther was writing for these people. Luther got his training with Ellington. And what Ellington asked Luther to do was to write for, as he said, his boys in the band, was to discover what their playing abilities were, both positive and negative, and write for the positive. And Luther carried that training and ability into his Broadway work. So he would see to it that the people he was writing for were actually featured at their very finest qualities. And then he turned that same technique to us, and he was very excited about, he felt his legacy, ultimately, of writing was through the Canadian Brass, and he wrote over 140 pieces for us.
Well, many of them are here on this album, Swing That Music. It is so excellent, and I have to use that word, Chuck, because, first of all, the playing and the quality of sound, which is of course, recognizable because of your ensemble. You know, you've established this height of perfection, I would say, in a sense. It's a wonderful ensemble. But the music is so thrilling. Some of it, I got a kick out of the Bach arrangements. I guess everyone takes Bach and does something with it. So Luther Henderson did a bebop thing, right. And then Dixie, and then kind of a slowy one, cool Bach, I guess. That's slow, isn't it?
Based on
a prelude, but all the rest are Louis Armstrong's. Well, certainly Blueberry Hill are things that he played all the time, and you associate with him. Is that the reason that you chose all of these?
Well, that's right. People assumed that we had had made a Louis Armstrong connection years ago, and in a sense, it seems so obvious, and it dawned on us finally that this is something that really needed to be done, and that Luther had really put us in touch with that legacy that Louis did leave behind. His Blueberry Hill is outstanding, of course. He actually had quite a hit with that himself.
Mm-hmm.
And then just the tunes themselves, Swing That Music, and there's a really wonderful one, the Strutting With Some Barbecue, which was written by Lewis's wife.
Oh, Lil Hardin, yes.
Uh-huh. Yeah. She was quite a major, I guess, in a sense, she was probably about 50 or 80 years too soon, but a woman composer, and it turns out she was amazing. And that's an amazing tune.
You hear her name when you investigate, you know, Louis Armstrong, mm-hmm. and his life story.
Mm-hmm.
He was, I'm going to ask you a question. As a trumpet player, okay, technically, you know, where did he get his training, and what did you think of him in terms of, he's a great style and wonderful personality and marvelous. He really was a jazz guy. But as a classical brass player, can you tell us a little bit about what you think of him or thought of him as a performer?
I think he was unusual in that when we think of older jazz players, say up until maybe Wynton Marsalis is the defining moment where trumpet players became trumpet players.
And
they could play any style. Prior to that, jazz players usually had very thin, bright sounds and just wouldn't fit in with other players. And Lewis somehow transcended that. He has a sound that even now when you listen to the recordings, they touch you emotionally, and they have the full body sound that a player today would recognize as contemporary. So he just must have had such a strong sound concept in his head,
mm-hmm.
that he was able to get beyond what at that point was the contemporary thinking about trumpet playing. And that's obviously what appealed to people that listened to him, and why his star was able to shine so bright. He had such a beautiful sound.
He did, and he also sang, which was rather interesting. I don't know any other trumpet players that sang.
Well, the singing is totally emotional. I've sort of had a parallel totally out of that field of music, but there's a fellow in Canada, a children's singer named Raffi, and every child knows his recordings, and every singer thinks that he's a non-event in singing, because it's just not what you'd teach or whatever, but it touches children's hearts. And I had that feeling about Lewis, like you certainly wouldn't teach that kind of singing at a school, yet I don't know anybody's rendition of songs that he's done that will ever get as close emotionally.
I think he couldn't contain himself. It was kind of like, you know, he just had to sing. You get this wonderful feeling across in this album. It's when I got it, I said, okay. You know,
here we go again.
Right. And of course, I should have known better with the Canadian brass. Wonderful, wonderful new release. And Chuck, just all the best to you and the whole ensemble. And we look forward again to more coming from this friend for so many, many years.
Well, thank you so much.
And thank you.
So great.
Wonderful.
Thanks, Jill.
Thanks.